This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.
Hello and welcome to Twin Peaks Investing. My name is Peter Higgins. You can find me at Conkers3 on Twitter. And I'm here with my colleague, Peter, at Wheelie Dealer on Twitter. We're here today on Twin Peaks podcast number 31 for you ladies and gents that are listening in the UK, in the Ukraine, that have been listening quite a lot recently, Ireland, and Sweden. Hello and welcome, and thank you for continuing to visit us and listen to us, and thank you for subscribing. Pete, how are you, mate?
Yeah, not bad, mate, not bad at all.
Good. I wanted to give us a quick shout out, Pete, to three listeners that have been quite proactive on our various platforms of late.
Okay.
There's a lady called Carol McDowney. Hi. Ooh. Carol, how are you doing? And there's a subscriber by the name of Stone Circles. Hello there, Stone Circles. And Twisted Rob Hughes. Rob's been writing on the SoundCloud platform and giving me various different feedback and having a chat on that particular platform. But hello, everyone, and welcome back. We've had some listeners, I think, maybe because of the podcast last week regarding Tesla and Apple. We've had quite a few people from the United States listening in also. So thank you all for listening. Welcome back if you come back for some more. Pete, where do you want to start this week, mate?
Well, I suppose, mate, you know, I hate to do it, but, you know, I've just finished watching that press conference from Boris.
Pete, you don't have to do it, mate. We don't have to talk about it, Boris.
Mate. Honestly, it's just soul destroying, isn't it? And basically where he's, you know, a sort of tightening of restrictions where, what is it, you're allowed six people to meet in a household, or six people meet outside. So that's quite unusual that there's no limit on outside. And that's particularly pertinent for me and for a load of people who joined me last Saturday for the Wheelie Bash. What was it, 2020 Wheelie Bash, the sixth one we've done, and a slightly subdued one this year for obvious reasons. I think we had about 22 people turn up. It went really well. Everyone was really happy, and we all did our social distancing and elbow nudging and all the usual stuff you do. But incredibly, we wouldn't be allowed to do that now, you know, from Monday. So it's quite surreal, really.
Well, this is it, Pete. I mean, they've given us, as they normally do, a heads up to say this is what's coming, and a ban on groups of more than six people gathering in homes, parks, pubs, and restaurants. So you've had this eat out to help out push, where everyone's gotten, you know, enjoyed the summer or parts of the summer to go to the pub, meet with family, go to the restaurant, etc., etc. And then it's like, okay, you can have one more weekend, but from Monday you can't do that anymore.
Yeah, and it just feels like real mixed messaging. I mean, even in the press conference, when one of the press people asked him the question, he sort of said, oh yeah, we want everyone to go back to work and, you know, and keep the economy going and all the rest of it. And then they're saying, oh yeah, but, you know, the virus is coming back and we're all doomed and it's the end of the world and you might not have Christmas. So, you know, that it's just
this is the problem, Pete. You can get on the bus, right? Use public transport, push, push, push. Use the trains, push, 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 right? You can send your kids back to school, right? We'll get some of them to wear masks and in the corridors, and depending on how old they are, blah, 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 right? But now you can't do this, right? And if you do, you get a £100 fine. And if you're a repeat offender, you might get a £3,200 fine. So it just seems, again, very reactionary, very ad hoc, you know, and the restaurants that were thinking, oh, crikey, we're going to survive, and the pubs that thought we might just get through this are now being told, you know what, you're stuffed again.
Well, and things like sporting venues now, they've been told they can't, because they were going to start doing trials of like having a bit of an audience at these kind of things, and that's all been shelved. So, I mean, they've got to do something, surely, for like all these sectors where, effectively the businesses are shut and it's through no real fault of the owners, And if we don't do something like that, we're not going to have a theatre industry. We're not going to have a music industry. I mean, it's just bonkers, really. I just find it all astonishing, but I
It's
think we've all just had enough of it all, really.
yeah. I mean, they were toying with and talking about, yeah, we're going to go back to having live sports again, right? So lots of people that I know that listen to this podcast, right, Pete, men and women, right? They enjoy football, all right? They enjoy their rugby,
Absolutely.
right? So they want to go out and enjoy these sports and watch it live. They don't want to watch it via TV. Right, because it's not the same atmosphere. They don't like want to go to a. They want to go to a live gig. They want to see a comedian live. You know what I mean? They want to have a concert
I don't want
live,
to live some life,
right?
don't.
So for the football fans and the rugby fans, they've gone out in August and gone, right, okay, I'll buy my season ticket. Yeah, I may not be able to go to all of the games because they might, share it out between the people that can go, right? But they've gone out and purchased season tickets for various clubs. I won't name any clubs, right? Various football clubs. And then 1 week after, 2 week after purchasing the tickets, I've been told actually you might not be able to go and watch any games for the foreseeable. So what's the financial implication for these football clubs who are sitting in a situation where they've had no revenue for 6 months almost, yeah? And now they've been told they may not have any revenue going forward. Plus, on top of that, Pete, I'm not sure you've caught on to this. There's a thing going round that various clubs who are in the Champions League, especially the Champions League, right? May have to rebate £581 million of TV revenue to the TV platforms. Obviously, Sky is one of the main ones, but there are others as well. Yeah, the Champions League. They haven't got 581 million. Most of these other clubs,
Well, I've spent it and it's gone.
they spent it. I mean, they've got some big clubs. They've got some big money, but Man United aren't the richest club in the world anymore.
Well, yeah, none of them will
And if
be.
they've got a portion of that to pay out on top of finding any, paying for players and paying for admin, I don't know. It's just crazy out there, mate. Crazy out there right now.
It's a mad world. I mean, when we turn to markets, it just seems like it's another sort of like source of negativity hanging over the markets. And obviously, there's sector specific problems like airlines, travel, whatever, that are clearly going to be struggling. But then on the flip side, one of the things that Boris was talking about was this moonshot thing about about mass testing. This was something that Tony Blair was going on, so it's obviously a crazy idea. Tony Blair was on about it months ago, saying we need to have mass testing for everybody. And they're talking about testing before you go to work. You have a test in the morning, and then you can associate with people who've also been tested, like it was normal, and all this. But the thing is, they can't even get track and trace working, so God knows how they're going to be able to do mass testing. I just find it absolutely surreal.
The thing about the track and trace, Pete, is about the speed of which you can actually get tested, yeah, and find out whether or not you've got it. And there are people that I know, and I'm sure you know of some as well, that have tried to get tested. Okay, where do I go if I want to get a test? Oh,
What's in
you have to
Vanessa?
travel 100 miles away, right? Oh, okay, I'll get a test delivered to my home. You get it delivered to your home, you send it back, and then it goes missing, or you haven't found out for 7 days. What are you meant to do then? You're meant to stay in your house for 7 days whilst you
Well,
wait to be tested if you're a teacher or a nurse.
you probably haven't got it anyway, because only 5% of the people tested have actually got it. So,
It just seems all a bit ad hoc, mate. We
but
haven't got.
it seems like they're trying to get the economy going again, and it's pretty obvious that Rishi Sunak, the Chancellor, is absolutely terrified. I heard something on the news yesterday where he sort of reiterated that they're not going to extend the furlough scheme, and I think Rishi Sunak is seeing the tax receipts, and he's seeing the government spending, which just seems to be completely out of control. And he's thinking, "Oh God, we're in trouble here," And I just, if we're crushing things like retail and stuff that are just sort of trying to get going again, we're now hitting consumer confidence massively by basically sending out the message that the virus hasn't gone away, and we've all got to be really worried again. It just seems really counterproductive. And that's got to surely put a cap on stocks in the short term. I just can't see how stocks can keep powering up like they have against that kind of backdrop.
I think the difficulty is, Pete, is that we already had headwinds. Yeah, I mean, we've spoken about it before with regards to BP and Shell, right? Because they were previously the larger components of the UK FTSE 100. And, you know, in the past, what is it, 4 or 5 weeks, you've seen, you spoke about Brent crude, yeah?
Mm.
And that's fallen back from 46.5 pounds per barrel to went sub 40 yesterday.
Yeah.
So
just under 40 it went, didn't it? So I think
just under 40. I mean, it's back up now. But
40 is
still got
pretty
BP,
much
Shell, still falling. Yeah. And until they start rising again, they're going to be a drag, continue to be a drag on the FTSE, as been for the past year and a half. They're down 50% plus. But going back to the track and trace thing you were talking about, there is I think it's Singapore the government there have got a trace together app and tokens which they've put into place, and they're basically going to be distributing that nationwide, Pete, from Monday. So we're going into a semi lockdown. Whilst in Singapore, they've got the systems in place to send out to everybody, distribute nationwide, an app which enables them to track and trace everybody, so people can go about their business, so they can go back to work, where venues can use this to check larger numbers of people, so they can actually come together, and it can be worn, you know, where masks don't have to be worn at all times.
So it's just so many different.
We're miles away from various other people in the countries. What's going on?
But then something I heard last night was that Korea, which was seen to be one of the good guys at beating the virus in the first place, is now in trouble again, and Seoul's in a big lockdown.
Yeah.
So it's you know, and France has got problems, Spain's got problems, Germany seems on top of things, but it's a bit mystifying as to how they've got away with it, but others haven't. Obviously, they've got better testing, but it must be more than just the testing. I wonder if German people are better obeying rules.
It goes back to what we were saying before, Pete, you know, and it might seem simple, right? But sometimes, you know, a good kiss is a bit as good as anything. Keep it simple, stupid, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you're not allowed to kiss, mate. There's no kissing anymore.
No kissing anymore. But just keeping it simple, all right? Would have been for all these countries to just get together and say collectively, let's just have a think about how we could put a strategy together where we could all do this and use the brains of everybody, right? Rather than all going off and doing all different things. And I know they say, oh, that country's that size and that one's not got any borders to anybody and that one's blah, 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 blah. But there's been like 20 different, 30 different strategies to this. And some countries have done okay with the first bit, and some people aren't going to do very well with the second bit. But everyone seems to have just gone about it in a different way.
Yeah, totally. With
different outcomes, you know. And yes, they're doing more and more testing, so therefore we're going to see more and more people test positive, you know. And hospitalizations, you know, haven't increased as far as last time I checked.
Well, no, it's interesting. The deaths today was 8 people, which, right. I mean, that's, you know, horrendous that 8 people have died. But, you know, in some context, 200 people will have died of smoking today. 50 people will have died of prostate cancer.
Yeah.
You know, and it's. But having said that, you look at countries like France and Spain, once they started seeing a pickup in cases, infection cases, it then led to more hospitalization.
Yeah.
So, you know, in a way, to be fair, perhaps the government in the UK is actually getting ahead of the curve for a change. But we'll only know in the next few weeks, won't we, as to what starts to happen.
Yeah, that would be, if you know, the UK being ahead regarding this would be very...
Well, it'd be a bit shocking, wouldn't it?
Would be shocking. It'd be you know, well needed. And, you know, I think people would love that, you know, because I noticed, and I know I'm going to get lampooned for this, but you'll recall how many people were championing and saying Boris is the best thing since sliced bread and Boris is this and Boris is that, you know, on Twitter, on social, various different social medias and in the press. The press has gone quiet now. They're all calling him this, that and the other now. And they've all turned very, very negative because it's now impacting what they want to happen, impacting their revenue stream and all the rest of it, because we simply haven't got the measure of this thing yet. We may not get the measure of it for some time. You know, and heaven forbid that, you know, we get a massive outbreak in the schools, which is what we've seen in France, Pete. Yeah.
Yeah.
And at some point or other, you know, the schools might well, you know, worst case scenario, have to close again. You know, what happens then when the young person's at home, the child's at home, the parent's got to be home, you know, and people pulling out of work again.
Yeah, well, that would definitely not be good for the economy. You were talking about Shell and BP just now. One of the things that, and I hold RDSB, Shell, and one of the things that's really stood out to me is how those charts really don't look good. You know, they're basically just downward traffic. And you look over the last 3 months on RDSB, and I'm assuming BP's the same, it's just a downtrend for 3 months. And I suspect those lows that were put in back in March will get taken out. I think it will fall through support, which is a bit frustrating because I hold it, but I'm not going to... I mean, really, it depends on oil price. If and when the oil price starts to recover, Shell and BP will recover, but it could be some time off, I think.
I mean, Pete, I know I've been negative on it, but I don't see any real purpose in holding that stock. And I know a lot of the damage has taken place in the past 2 years. But, you know, if you're buying it for income... You're buying it for income, but
yeah, well, you're hardly getting any of that now. Yeah.
If you've held it for the last year, you know, you've gained 8%, 6% dividend, depending on what price you bought it at, but you're down 45% all in.
Yeah,
you know, and it's halved, Pete. If you've held it, most people that are holding RDSB will not be trading that stock. Yeah, the few that are would have to be nimble, but those that have bought it for the past 5 years have made a loss holding that stock.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. And I think the yield is probably, what, 5.5% now or something. But, you know, there's all sorts of pressures on it.
I think it's more than that, Pete, at the minute.
Is it? Yeah, it probably is crawling up now. Remember, they cut the dividends, so the historic and the future dividends are going to be different.
Right. So it's closed today at £10.41. It's up a little bit because the market's had a bit of a pop.
But yeah.
The funny thing is, going on to markets, Pete... is that, you know, I saw these Armageddon-type tweets last night and this morning, you know, people talking about, you know, the market's doomed, this is going to happen. The tweet that you sent me was about AstraZeneca falling 10%. You know, someone had sent it out saying, oh, it's likely that AstraZeneca falls 10%. I was like, what absolute nonsense. You know what I mean? You know, trials of drugs.
I think it rose today, didn't it, in the end?
Yeah, trials of drugs end up getting delayed and, you know, there's always difficult circumstances, but you tend not to hear much about it. But obviously with this COVID stuff, lots of people are going to be talking about delays and this, that and the other because they wanted to get organised and, you know, the possibility of getting a good test out as quickly as possible. But, you know, for AstraZeneca to lose essentially 11 billions in value for a delay, I just couldn't see it happening. So I just said, look, you know, AstraZeneca is far more than just this COVID vaccine, right? And I said this before twice now, third time, you know, AstraZeneca is not likely to make that much money out of the COVID vaccine because they're not deemed to or not going to be allowed to profiteer from it. So AstraZeneca is far more than the COVID vaccine, you know, and the stock, you know, was volatile once again today as a consequence of people trying to trade it down or short it, whatever. And it had a range between £80.96, Pete, and £84. Yeah, and finished at £83.86.
Well, that's a lot of points if you were betting it or whatever.
So, but it ended up, Pete, 0.4%.
Yeah, classic.
Rather than minus 4%. So, you know, it's going to be volatile. And when this vaccine comes out, you know, it'll gain the prestige of it, but it will not make that much money from it. And AstraZeneca is far more than this vaccine. The most important thing about this vaccine is the benefit it will have regarding the UK government and the UK economy and the prestige that comes with that, as in AstraZeneca have been able to help get this developed, you know?
And obviously that is positive for stocks. You
positive
know,
for stocks.
If and when a vaccine comes out, stocks are going to like it. You know, as soon as they get a real sniff, and it'll be you know, it's too late once the vaccine's announced. It'll be, you know, once there's rumours in the market or sniffs in the market that they have definitely got a vaccine and it works, and we've got, a rough timetable when it's coming out, then you'll see stocks really start to motor, I think.
Absolutely. But, but it goes back to the fact, Pete, that we don't have any tech stocks of a size of AstraZeneca in the FTSE 100. Yeah? Because if we had the Apples of the world and the Teslas of the world and the Microsofts of the world and Nvidia of the world, the FTSE 100 would be way up there because the tech's been on a run up until the last few days. And on that same note, you had the Armageddon people saying, "Oh, the end is nigh, the end is nigh." Because Tesla had lost, what was it, like 30%, 33% in 5 days?
Did it lose that much? I haven't really noticed it.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's lost almost a
I
third
picked up
in
that it
five.
had some pretty bad days.
Yeah, it
Wow.
lost a third in the case of 5 days trading. However,
Okay.
what people don't take into account, Pete, is that it was up 400% year to date and more. So if you've got a stock that's up 14%, at 400% year to date, if it loses 33%, it's like, all right, okay. It's down 33% in 5 days. Right, okay. Now, should I be worried about it? Now, in the past month, it was up, it's still up 16%. Now, if you've got a stock that's up 16%,
Yeah, I'd love to have loads of stocks up
loads of, if you
16%.
had,
That's,
if had,
yeah.
if your portfolio was up 16% year to date, I think you'd be happy.
Oh, God, you'd be
There's some
really
people that
happy.
would like to have one stock in their portfolio that's up 16% in the last month.
Exactly.
So, it's all context, people. The stock was up 650% in 1 year alone, and it's now down 30%, 33% in the space of 5 days. It's
I've been.
context. Don't get carried away with people saying uber bullish stuff or uber negative stuff. Read, research, and get some context so you can make your own decision and do something, that enables you to stay calm and keep rational about what's happening with the stock market and your portfolio.
Don't panic. I've been fascinated by the Nasdaq. I mean, I've quite I tech, because I've got this bizarre fascination with technical analysis, charting, and I've just loved the Nasdaq because I could see, last week or the week before that it was just getting so stretched to the upside. It was just glaringly obvious that some sort of drop was coming. And you're still seeing all these people who are like, oh yeah, tech's going up to the moon and tech will keep going up and tech's always going to go up and all the rest of it. And it was like, yeah, it probably will go up ultimately, but in the short term, it needs to calm down a bit because it's all got a bit silly. It was on like an RSI of 84, which is just like bonkers, really.
It has been bonkers, Pete, but lots of people have been calling it bonkers for the whole year to date until the last couple of days
Oh yeah, when you look at.
when Tesla and Apple rolled over a little bit. But year to date, as we speak, Pete, last 5 days it's lost 7%, 7% plus, right? 5 days. Over the past month, it's still up 1.5%, right? 3 months, it's up 11%. Yeah, year to date, up 24.5%, Pete. Over the
Which is
past 12
incredible,
over the past
incredible.
12 months, Pete, it's up 36%. How many people's portfolio is up 36%
Very few.
in the past 12 months? There you
Yeah,
go.
very few. There will even be many short-term traders who will struggle to do
Struggled with that.
36%.
Exactly.
Yeah,
And
it's an
meanwhile,
astonishing run.
meanwhile, we go back to our beloved FTSE 100, which is, it's had a really good day today, Pete. It's popped again back up above 6,000. So the people that were putting out, metal outfits, metal armory this morning, saying they're hiding behind the sofa, the market's actually ended up 1.3%, and we're back above 6,000 again. So I keep saying the trap door is 6,000. You were saying the main trap is at what, 5,780 is the main
Yeah,
one.
down below. Yeah, it's
Yeah,
like
so after
I've
that,
seen it.
we're in no man's land, and we need to really watch out below that. But for me, six is a psychological one, Pete. Six round numbers. So that's what we need. So over the past 5 days, we're actually up 1.21%, Pete. So we're outperforming
I mean,
the
I've
Nasdaq.
got a short. I've got quite a large short on the FTSE 100 now. I'm basically 38% hedged using the
Right.
FTSE 100. And to be
I
honest with you, I'm very happy with that position. And the reason is because if you look at the chart over about, say, 2 months or whatever, there's a really clear downtrend channel. It's very well defined. And I think all today's move has been is just a sort of pop up within that, because it had got a bit, you know, extended to the downside. But if you, my favorite indicator is that 1321 EMA, 1321 daily EMA.
The caveat being, though, is that, as I keep reiterating to people, right, we're now in the, we're on this last lap towards the elections now.
Yeah. Okay.
So we've got X amount of weeks before November 3rd or whatever the date is, right? And what's going to happen between now in September, October, and late October is that Trump, I think, is going to throw a Hail Mary at the markets, yeah, in order to have the markets up as high as possible, yeah.
I'm more worried about what he's.
Bear with me, and if he does throw this at the market, it will then drag up the FTSE. So you're going to end up having to pull that short off before you get to 6,300, because you're going to see the US markets keep pushing and pushing and pushing. We're still down year to date 20% on the FTSE 100, and 1 year down 18% as we speak. So I suspect that things will change, Pete. So
yeah,
just be mindful of that edge, mate.
Yeah, I mean, I will just basically switch my brain off to any of the news going on, really, in terms of what I do in my short. And I'll just be looking at what the charts tell me. And at the moment, the charts tell me to be short, and I'm going to stay short. Interesting, on that presidential election one, I picked up a really interesting stat or whatever from Simon Thompson in the Investors Chronicle this week.
Yeah.
And I've got to try and remember if I sort of wrote it down quickly, but I might have only wrote down half of it. So anyway, basically it says, since 1984, if the US stock market rises, and I think it means the S&P 500, yeah? If the US market rises over the 3 months of August, September, October, before the election, then the incumbent is going to win. And that has happened every time since 1984. Now, if you go back even more, since 1928, that rule has applied for 20 elections out of 23. So there's a very interesting indicator there of who's going to win the election.
Well, and like I said, he's likely to throw money at the market again, mate. So it'll be very interesting to see what actually happens. So, yeah, very, very interesting times indeed, Pete.
Well, I saw something, mate. I've got to say this because it just blew my brain. I was watching, I think it was Channel 4 News, yeah, which is like a slightly surreal news program. But in some ways, it's very good. And I just couldn't believe what I was seeing. In Louisville, Kentucky, which sort of rings a bell with me because it's where Nicky Hayden, who was world motorcycle champ, MotoGP champion, 500cc champion in 2006. Unfortunately, he passed away 2 years ago or whatever. He came from Louisville, Kentucky, so the place sort of like sticks in my brain.
Okay.
And it was astonishing. They had a white militia, right? So literally men in paramilitary, yeah, black paramilitary uniform with AK, you know, machine guns. What they call AR-15s and God knows what else, yeah. Tooled up like you cannot imagine, right? You think that's bad enough? And we are talking an army of these people. We are talking 100 of them, something like that. If you think that's bad enough, on the other side of town, there's a black militia, basically exactly the same, tooled up with weapons and all in military fatigues and God knows what else. And I'll tell you what, America's a tinderbox. It's horrific.
It sadly is a tinderbox, Pete. And, you know, there is people that I look at some of their tweets and I look at what's being said from various very well-minded people, educated people that are on the circuit regarding certain TV programs and, you know, TV outlets and media outlets. And they're saying, you know, it's on the cusp of there being another civil war, Pete. You keep hearing this mentioned civil war, civil war. And it would not surprise me. at the worst case scenario is that you see more deaths before you see less deaths before the year's out, you know.
Well, I've been watching that on Channel 4 News. I just couldn't believe what I was seeing. And you won't see any of that on BBC News or Sky News. They won't show you that. But
but you will see it on other media outlets. They'll show it you, because the problem is that there is a freedom to carry and have arms, so you can have as many guns as you want, as long as you know you're of a certain age, and even the ones that aren't legal can have weapons. So yeah, you're going to have that situation, Pete. So unfortunately, it's going to be difficult, mate. It's going to be difficult.
It was crazy. And I guess what worries me about that is, you know, we know what Trump's like. The guy's a loon, and
Pete,
you know,
can't
the kind
that.
Of things he
we
will
can't
say.
Say that, Pete. You can't say that.
The kind of things he'll say on the presidential debate. I mean, I think the presidential debates, I mean, if you think the ones with Hillary were bad, I think this is going to be another level. I just think it's going to go absolutely ballistic. And, you know, so it's something we need to keep an eye on, because it all could just get really quite nuts.
Right. I think we'll move this conversation on, mate.
Yeah, mate, you want to talk about smaller indexes?
Yes, we had a... A nice little bit of feedback on Twitter from our good friend Edmund Shing. Edmund is known via his Twitter handle of @TheIdleInvestor. So if you're not following Edmund, you need to. He is the global head of equity and derivative strategy at BNP Paribas. And he's also a financial columnist at IBT Times and an author of the book The Idle Investor. And if you want to hear an interview from him, I interviewed him some time ago. You can find that interview on my Conquest Corner podcast, and you can find it on my website. Really nice guy. He gave us some.
Hi,
feedback.
Edmund.
Say again.
Hi, Edmund.
he gave us some great feedback, but he said, guys, you know what? There's more to life, essentially, he was trying to say, than the FTSE 100. Please, can you talk about the smaller indexes? And so that's what we're going to do. So his comment was, good podcast, Peter Times 2. The only comment I have, a small gripe, if I may, is that many listeners like myself are much more invested in the small cap end of the spectrum. So perhaps a focus on indices such as the FTSE 250 and small cap 2. So just for you, Ed, the FTSE 250 is currently down 19.95% year to date. And the FTSE small cap is down 14%. Year to date. However, the winners in the FTSE 250, some of these we've spoken about before, because we did talk about some of these winners before, Pete, across different indices. And still riding high at the top is good old AO World, which is up 152% in the past 6 months. Cairn Energy up 127%. Petropavlovsk, which we spoke about before, POG, up 121%. 888 Holdings up 111%. Kaz Minerals up 109%. P-Tech, which is a gambling software company, up 109%. William Hill up 106%. Again, another gambling stock. Gamesy Group up 92%. Future
GameSys.
Up 92%. Future PLC, a former holding of mine, up 88% in 6 months, and Plus 500 up 85%. And let's throw one more in, which is a stock that I've always liked. Renishaw, RSW, is up 79%.
That's had a takeover, isn't it, that one?
So you have some winners there, which have done exceptionally well in the FTSE, did I say? Yeah.
FTSE 250,
yeah.
Yeah.
The thing is, Pete, is that we keep saying it, you know, you have to do your research in these stocks to see which stocks are going to be resilient depending on the circumstances. Don't wait for the circumstances to happen for you then to go, I've got the wrong stock here. You've got to do your research. You've got to look at what's going on. The market is different to where it was last year. Yeah. The markets have changed so significantly. So if you're in the wrong sectors, hospitality, for instance, or travel, regardless of which sector you're in, whichever indices this stock falls in, you're going to be absolutely hammered. So in the FTSE 250, the losers, Aston Martin, which we've all talked about before, some people are still holding that stock. I'm not sure why.
I've got to throw this in, mate. I've got to throw this in. I discovered something about Aston Martin today. Right? Okay.
It doesn't have Aston Martin parts in it anymore, Pete. Did you know that?
Oh, mate. Well, yeah, nothing surprises me. Aston Martin, the name, it comes from a bloke called Lionel Martin, who was a racing driver in something like 1908. And he used to race up a hill near Aylesbury called Aston Clinton Hill.
Ah.
Ah, see? Like see don't me. Say that Twin Peaks Investing Podcasts are not full of amazing information.
Brilliant. So Aston Martin down 74% in 6 months. National Express down 56%. In 6 months, First Group 45%, Crest Nichols 43%, Go Ahead Group down 41%, Micro Focus down 40%, Vistry, previously known as Bovis, I think that one, Pete, is it?
That was Galliford Try and Bovis. It sort of, it was Bovis effectively got hold of the housing part.
Oh, that was right. Galliford. Yeah, I remember that bit. Yeah. That's down 37%. Workspace Group down 36%. So yeah, so what you've seen there, car, travel company, First Group, National Express, Crest Nichols, builder, Go Ahead, Travel Again, Micro Focus, which is completely out of sorts ever since they bought that big purchase via Hewlett Packard, which it just killed them.
A great example in earnings destroying acquisition.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Really. Mega acquisitions. Yeah.
Absolutely smashed it to pieces, Pete. So yeah. So not great on their regard, and it was almost like a meal too far of gluttony, really. You know, and then, which happens to a lot of mega mergers, Pete. You know, historically, so many of them simply have not worked.
No. You're right.
So if you're in a company and you see them doing a mega merger, you've got to start thinking ahead of time and thinking maybe it's time to get out. You know.
Well, that's interesting because one that happened the other day, and a lot of people sort of said, oh, blimey, that looks a bit chunky, is that Aviva, AVV. You know, they did that big merger just a couple of weeks ago, didn't they? And it'd be interesting to see how that one plays out because that is a hell of a morsel.
Well, I've not looked at it much, Pete, but what are the synergies like for that one?
I think they're probably quite good, but it's just the sheer scale, you know, that we're talking about a big, I mean, Aviva, AVV has been a very good business and it has been for years, you know, but even that might find it hard if you take a bite of something that's just too big. So I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens there.
Are you talking now about this, the Schneider Electric bit?
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, it could work out fine. The market, it really jumped up on the day of the deal, but it just sort of has that sense of that sort of mega merger, and you just think, cool, fingers crossed, I hope this works.
Sorry, Pete, I've got that one completely wrong. That's the old one they did. You're talking about the OSI Soft 5 billion merger, aren't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I got that one completely wrong.
It's not something I particularly follow, but yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's an interesting one, mate. I obviously it's software, it's tech, it's a big merger. It really depends on the culture and the fit and whether or not, you know, companies actually continue to use them. You know, I think the last time we spoke, shortly afterwards, we had RSW trying to merge with SDL.
Yes.
You know, the language company, Pete. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, we had a premium of 52% on the move, and I'd recently purchased it in the dip. You know, we're saying is Cash King. Remember the podcast, Cash King?
Oh yeah, I remember you mentioned SDL. You've done brilliant. Well done, mate.
Yeah, and SDL was the one of the companies I'd bought at £3.88 when nobody wanted it. All the stocks were getting sold out with the bathwater.
Yeah.
And then the merger, as it looks at the moment, when it came out, was basically valuing SDL at £9.02, Pete.
Oh, yeah. Well done.
So I'd done that in a couple of months. But, what I think regarding certain components of the market is that there is still value out there. you know, you wouldn't have these mergers with 20, 30, 40% premium if there wasn't value there.
Oh, mate, I think there's value everywhere. I honestly see so much value in the markets. I also see a lot of overpriced stuff, but that, you know, that's the stuff to avoid.
Absolutely. So you just have to do your own research and not wait for everyone to say this is the stock that I think is the best thing since sliced bread, because unfortunately there is a lot of stocks. I spoke about Fevertree before, where people will tell you that this is the best thing since sliced bread, and then, you know, next thing you know, it goes up 5, 10, 15%, and then the share price, you know, X amount of days later, goes back down 10, 15, 25%, because they're selling into the spike, but they're using you and everybody else that's doesn't know anything about the stock to actually get in and out of the stock to create liquidity. So that stock's been sitting there flatlining for 3 months, 2 months, whatever. Suddenly it pops because every man and his dog is ramping it or talking about it. And then you're left there holding the stock for the next 3 months or 3 years, trying to get back to break even. And the stock just goes further down, further down, further down. And that's the beauty of doing your own research rather than following other people into stocks.
Well, funny enough, Fever's an interesting one because I hold Fever. And I've had a sort of interesting journey with it, because I bought it a while ago. It went up and up and up and up and up, and it went up a lot. And I thought, oh, this has done well, but it's getting a bit toppy. So I sold a load, and basically I think I sort of banked 2/3 of the position I had and did really well on it. But I still hold like a rump because I still think it's a really interesting business. And they had results a couple of days ago. I thought the results were really good. I was really quite impressed. And what I like about Fevertree is it's, you look at what it's achieved in the UK, where it basically dominates premium mixer drinks. I think it can replicate that across Europe, across Australia, Canada, and the US. And they're really starting to get traction in the US. And they've achieved all this with the pub shut. So I think the potential of Fever is absolutely superb. And Fever's one I will be looking at to take more to get more of a position in.
Pete, I'm sadly going to have to disagree with you, mate. You know, I still think that share is overpriced. Yeah, it was overpriced at 40 quid. I still think it's overpriced now. If you look at what the revenues are and what the expectations were when it was last year, it was at 20 quid. It was overpriced. This year, yeah, even more overpriced because the revenues simply haven't arrived. So it's there on brand and marketing. It's the reason why it's sitting at 21, 22 quid. Yeah. If you look at the valuation, what it's got, and the PE that it's on, right, and the market cap compared to what the generating of revenue, yeah, that to me is probably a market cap's what, 2.5 billion, 2.4 billion. Market cap should be nearer to 1 billion. That's a £10 stock if things don't go right, Pete. So I've watched.
Oh, you're absolutely right.
Seriously, watch out, because if they deliver, it will be at 30 quid. If they don't deliver, you're looking at 15 or 10 quid, mate. So just be mindful.
Have you got SharePad in front of you at the moment?
No. The reason why I don't need to look at it, Pete. Saying that, Pete, is because they've saturated the UK, and now the pubs are shut.
Right. Yeah.
So then, and now we've got this thing kicking off again on Monday, where the restaurants and pubs are not going to get the numbers that they're going to get, right? So then you're looking at what we're going to be doing at Christmas regarding this. Yeah. So you've lost the summer numbers, and they've done reasonably okay. They haven't really popped anymore in the US. They still haven't managed to do the traction in the US. Yeah. Are they going to replicate it in Australia, like you say, or Canada, or anywhere else? I don't know.
Well, I think they already are. I think from what, you know, I had a really good read through the results the other day, and things like in America, where what they're doing, they've got a very careful step plan as to how they're attacking America, and they're gradually moving through the steps, and you can see them doing it. And I think they are absolutely doing it right. And the potential in America is absolutely immense. And the thing to remember in the UK is, okay, the pubs are shut, but they're selling loads more to people sat at home who are now drinking long drinks with mixers rather than drinking beer and wine. And they've been doing multi-pack cans and bigger sizes. And yeah, I think their growth was up, their revenues up was like 32%. But these are really strong. Yeah, that's overall, yeah? In the UK, I think it was up a little bit, not much. But because it's such a, you know, the UK is a mature market, but the point is they can replicate that in other countries.
Well, Pete, for you, for your sake and everybody else's sake, I hope the share doesn't go from 40 to 20 to 10.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying. Just be mindful, because these companies have a habit of promising and promising, and not all of them deliver. That's all I'm saying.
No, that's right. That's right. Yeah. And I guess the thing with Fever is that it is, has been shown to deliver in the past. And I think it is a quality outfit. But as you say, the expectations are very high.
Yeah.
You know.
Okay. I wanted to go back to Edmund and the Adler Investor, talk about some of the winners in the FTSE small cap space, Pete.
Yeah.
So some of those winners, we've got Premier Foods. Everyone seems to be eating cake, you know, buying additional cakes to eat at home.
The stuff of faces.
Yeah. So that's up 253% in 6 months. Indivia, we spoke about before. And then shortly after that, last time we spoke about it on podcast, Pete, they got a reprieve, didn't they? Or paid the fine and moved on. So that's up 186% in 6 months. BTM Advanced Communications, ticker symbol BVC.
Oh, BATM, yeah.
Yeah, that's up 158%. CMC Markets up 112% in 6 months. Lucico up 102% in 6 months. Clipper Logistics 98%. Pacific Horizon Investment Trust up 94%. Funding Circle, which got written off before last year, remember, Pete?
Oh, yeah.
You want to know it. Six months is up 88%. Wow. And bizarrely, or not bizarrely, Dignity, the funeral co, is up 75% in the past 6 months. So those are some of the winners.
They had the Competition Commission inquiry called off, didn't they, Dignity?
Yeah, and that caused it to pop, didn't it?
Mm.
I wonder how much lobbying went on there, mate.
Yeah, it does make you wonder. Hey, in that list of stocks you read out, you had Crest Nicholson.
Yeah.
Sorry, in the losers, you had Crest Nicholson.
The previous one, yeah.
CRFT. And you had Vistry, VTY. I think they're really interesting because, I mean, I hold VTY, so obviously it's very interesting to me. Mm-hmm. But the interesting thing there is that I wonder what the outlook for housing is. I think it's really uncertain.
It's uncertain, but the likelihood is, given the state of play and the fact that a lot of the UK revenue, well, a significant chunk of revenue is created via the sale and marketing of houses, the likelihood is that the government's going to keep on, you know, supporting the construction and the housing industry because they want people to be buying and selling houses, don't they?
Well, you'd think so.
In the past few months, you've seen lots of houses going up for sale, and you've seen lots of great numbers regarding people are returning back to the property market. So they probably will do okay, Pete, and probably better value than they were last year. You know,
well,
but will they get the revenues to accommodate that? I don't know.
Well, it's funny you say it, because, I mean, VTY had results, I don't know, a couple of days ago. It might even have been yesterday. I'm recording this on Wednesday, the 9th of September. It might have been yesterday or the day before. Vistry had results, and they were pretty good. And when you look at the valuation, I think it's on like a sort of forward PE of about 6 or something. So it doesn't look expensive at all. But that's on the assumption that, you know, some sort of recovery keeps going and the government does push money towards houses and lets them all keep building. But I mean, if they clamp down again, if there's another lockdown, then you can forget it. It's going to be hard work.
Yeah, I think the only thing I've got with these builders, Pete, and I'd watch out for it, regarding Vistry, is whilst the debt's going down, it's still quite significant, you know, because what was it last time? 400 mil or something like that? 476 mil, I'm trying to find it. Yeah, 476 mil when they did its last trading update. It's come down again to 357, so they're actually making good progress on the debt.
Yeah.
If they can't get the sales because we get another lockdown or things go backwards again, you know, that debt's going to go back up again. Are you with me?
Yeah, I think it's really weird with house builders because their debt levels and their net cash levels seem to swing all over the place. And it really depends on what they're spending on land banks, what they've got in constructed houses that are waiting to sell. You know, so I think it's really, you've got to sort of dig really deep into not only the balance sheet and the cash flow and whatever. You've also got to look at what's actually going on in the business, and you can tell that from the narrative. So I don't know. It's a difficult one to tell with that. I mean, that level of debt doesn't sound ridiculous for something like that, especially when you consider
Okay.
the bank it's got.
Okay.
But it's one of those where I'm quite happy to hang on to it and see what happens. And, you know, the chances are it's just as likely to go up quite a lot as it is to drop.
Yeah.
Well,
Absolutely.
if anything, the downside will probably be less because it's had so much pain already.
Yeah, and this is the trouble, isn't it, with certain stocks. You've got to be careful. And I think we spoke about it before, Pete, and it's another one of those quandaries really where you have to be mindful and keep a track on the debt, because if going forward, revenues aren't generated, you've got a drag on the company. And then if the company, we spoke about, placings before and number of placings. The larger companies don't do them as frequently, but if you've got a smaller company in a certain sector and that sector starts to implode or not do so well, you're going to see placings galore. So you have to be mindful that if your company's already in debt and starts to struggle, you're going to see a placing. That means that you're just going to get more and more diluted.
On those indexes, the thing that stood out to me, because pretty much every night during the week, I look at the major index charts, and I usually tweet out about, sort of the ones that I see as key. And the thing that's hit me about the FTSE 250 is it's been going sideways for about 4 months. It's just basically in a sideways range, and the FTSE small cap almost mirrors the FTSE 250.
Right, okay.
And the one that stands out is AIM, because AIM All Share has been on a tear. It's absolutely shot up. When I looked last night, it was just going sideways a bit, which is probably just a sideways consolidation. If the general sentiment and general mood in the market stays okay, then I would expect the AIM All Share to keep pushing up. However, if the mood goes very much a sort of autumn, September, October, risk off kind of mood, then AIM will be hammered.
Yeah, we spoke about this before, and AIM, the FTSE AIM All Share Index has been outperforming all of the UK indices, year to date. It's currently down 1.22%, Pete, right? Versus the small cap, which is down 14.4%. So, you've got your behemoths on there. People that have been buying ASOS, been buying Boohoo, and others accordingly, and they've done exceptionally well by buying those stocks. And year to date, most of those haven't done so badly either. So that's another index really to keep an eye on regarding performance. There's going to have its, if you choose the right sector in that space, again, you'll do reasonably well. And you've got to be very, very selective. And once again, you've got to look at the management and what they've done previously. But the past 6 months, the winners have not been the names that you would expect. So, for instance, one of the COVID stocks, COVID plays that's done phenomenally well, is called Avacta Group, and that's up 715% in 6 months.
Yeah, AVCT. It's been astonishing, isn't it?
AVCT, Gretland Gold, which I'm not sure how much gold they've ever mined, but they've got a great land bank. They're up 333%. In 6 months. ITM, one of mine, that's up 149% in 6 months.
Lovely.
ASOS, we've spoke just said about, that's up 137% in 6 months.
Which one?
Renal Ticks, isn't it? Renal Ticks AI,
Is it renalytics?
Renalytic
Renal,
AI.
yeah, kidney
That's
stuff.
ticker symbol RENX. That's up 121%. Pan African Resources, 120% up. Frontier Developments, because lots of people sitting at home doing various gaming stuff, that's up 113% in
Oh,
six
FDev,
months.
yeah, FDev.
You've already mentioned more people just sitting at home drinking stuff, Pete. Naked Wine, up 113%.
That, I find that one quite surreal. if you remember, they were what happened. It used to be Majestic Wine,
Ah, so
MJW.
okay. I lost track of that one.
Yeah, well, MJW was, Majestic Wine, which had those big warehouses and stuff, and was really a good business, and it had run as a very good business for years and years and years and years. And then, if you remember, it did the merger with Naked Wines, which was an online wine seller. And it all
Okay.
seemed to go badly wrong. I mean, it really was a complete catastrophe, really. And I'm not quite sure how it's all turned out, but I got a funny feeling. I'm not even sure if they have Majestic Wine anymore, if they've actually sold it off and just become an online retailer. I think that's quite possible. I don't really know. It's not one that I particularly look at. But I must say, with the history, I just find it astonishing that it's done so well.
Well, if it's online, Pete, and people are getting, choosing and being able to select their wines and have it delivered to their house, given the fact that everyone's working from home and not really going out of the house, everyone's doing things online, Pete. We've said this, so the onliners that we've spoken about before have been the outperformers. We've talked about Marks and Spencer not doing so well. Why not? Because people aren't going into a Marks and Spencer store. They're shopping online. So, if they're not going shopping to buy clothes and groceries, and they're doing it online, then the ones that are doing it online are going to win,
It's
right?
funny, isn't
So
it? Because it's.
Naked Wine is probably why that's up 100%, Pete.
Yeah,
It's one
definitely.
that's completely I've completely missed. You know what I mean? Because I saw that Naked Wine, I haven't researched it, and I'm thinking, well, Diageo's down. Why is Diageo down? Well, because people aren't going out buying, the way that you used to buy various different spirits and all the rest of it. Yeah, and I'm not sure how much Diageo actually sell directly to themselves. Online, because you buy your groceries from thingy, you might put the odd bottle of whiskey and the odd bottle of this and that in, but if you're a retail outlet online, then you're gonna do okay. But saying that, you've had is it Quiz and Jewels clothing? They've not done
Both.
very well online, so maybe they're just putting out the wrong stuff.
It's funny, isn't it? Because I think there's a lot of companies that have sort of been saved by the crisis. There were a lot, particularly in that drug sector. Where, loads of companies that weren't particularly doing much, and all of a sudden, this coming along has enabled them to create testing kits and vaccines and God knows what else. And it's been an absolute lifesaver to so many of these companies.
Oh mate, I mean, especially the ones on AIM that have, they're all. It's a bit like before, Pete. You remember when it was all about blockchain, right? And every
Oh,
single company on
yeah.
AIM was saying, "Oh, we've given up mining and we've given up oil and gas, and we're now involved in blockchain. Oh, we're now giving up that, and we're now involved in gold." You're like, "Oh my gosh, you guys are just jumping on the bandwagon," And some of these companies were already in that space, but they've adapted their stuff to look at testing kits and all the rest of it, and kudos to them. And the share prices have gone up tenfold, Pete, 15-fold, some of
Oh, yeah.
them, but like I've said with all these things, Pete, it's about what happens after. If and when there is a vaccine, for instance, what happens to some of these share prices? You have to be wary of the fact that some of these could just capitulate overnight if and when this vaccine thing comes. So for those people that are sitting there sitting pretty, just be mindful and be ready for when things change, because some of these word of a better word balloons, when they get popped, are just gonna the air's gonna go out of them, and whoosh, you could be down in a heart significantly in a heartbeat. You know what I mean?
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? It's like if you're involved in the wrong vaccine or the wrong test, it could just be disastrous. You know what I mean? There's a lot of hope and expectation built into it. So, people just I mean the obvious thing to do is if you're in one of these kind of stocks and it's done really well, just top slice a bit so you don't lose your profit if it goes bang.
Agreed. Agreed, mate. Agreed.
It's interesting. Something that came up, you were talking about how the FTSE 100 was down, what, 20 odd percent this year, and the small caps were down, whatever. And I think AIM was the only one that was sort of just, it was still about down about 3% or whatever.
Yeah, AIM's down one. What AIM all shares down 1.22. FTSE's down. FTSE 100 is down 21.1%. FTSE small cap down 14, and FTSE 250 down 19.95.
See, what I find interesting is that when I was at the Wheelie Bash on Saturday, I was talking to a lot of, I mean, we get a mix of people at the Wheelie Bash. We have, every single possible way of interacting with the markets is represented by the people who turn up, But there's obviously quite a few of us who are of a similar kind of approach as myself and you also, I think, where we sort of have a sort of quality and valuation kind of ethos. And what was interesting about that was that so many of us, our results were clustering. So what I mean by that is there was some in the group who, I mean, one guy I think was up 20% on the year. He's done really well, and hats off to him. And then there's other people like myself who are sort of around break even. I think I'm down 3% on the year since January the 1st, as we discuss this. And then there's other people who are down 15%. But to a large extent, you know, we're all clustering in the same sort of area. But it's interesting that the majority of us have actually done better than nearly every single one of those indexes you've named, which I find sort of encouraging, really.
It's encouraging, Pete, but I would caveat that with the fact that we don't know to the extent as to how much of those numbers have been created by trading or investing or a combination of the two.
Yeah. Well, I'm sort of to an extent doing like with like here, because I know the individuals concerned.
Oh, okay.
I know how they operate. But do you know what? I would say the biggest variable factor, and the reason the guy has done 20%, whereas others have lost 15%, the biggest variable is that the guy who's done really well is very good at stock picking. I'm going to name him because he's a superstar. Michael T on Twitter, yeah? He's an absolute superstar. His stock picking is excellent. But the thing that's really noticeable is that he only holds, I think he has like 15 stocks. So he has quite a focused portfolio. Whereas like I myself, yeah, I've got 52, you know. So it's interesting that the big variable is the number of stocks you hold. But obviously buying good stocks helps.
But is Michael T not a trader, Pete?
No, I wouldn't have him down as a trader. I mean, he'll buy something. I mean, yes, he probably does churn things a lot more than I would. But, you know, he sticks to quality. He holds things for reasonable timescales. He'll hold something for 6 months if that's what it's going to take to play out, you know. He's not someone who's chopping and changing every day or anything. So he does let the value come out. One thing that was interesting was that he doesn't have a size limit on what he'll let things grow to within his portfolio. So, like for me, if a stock, say I buy 4 or 5% of my portfolio in a particular stock, and say it does well and it grows to like 10-12%, I'm thinking of top slicing it because I don't want it getting much bigger than 12% because I just don't feel comfortable. But it's interesting that Michael was saying that he'll basically just let them run forever. If they became 90% of his portfolio, he wouldn't be that bothered.
But this is the thing, Pete. I've never known Michael to hold a stock beyond 3 months, never mind 6 months.
Yeah, that may be a factor then. So, you know, but no, I mean, as I say, the thing that stands out to me is this clustering that, you know, we've got Michael as a bit of an outlier because he's done really well. We've got other people who are down 20%. They haven't done so well, but they're a bit of an outlier. But there's a lot of clustering around that sort of like break-even kind of level.
Yeah. The most important aspect of all these numbers, Pete, is that, and I would stress this to everybody that's listening, right, is not to compare your performance to anybody else's. The most important thing to do is to look at how you performed last year and compare your performance against that. And each year, what you're trying to do is make less mistakes. And each year, what you're trying to do is improve and grade yourself as to how you're getting on with this year in comparison to what you did last year. And if you can match that performance of 2029 or exceed that performance of 2029, that is what your goal should be. Not anyone else's percentage. So, because some of the stuff that you're going to see on Twitter and on social media isn't accurate. Okay, so compare your performance against your own. And something got shared today, Pete.
Mm.
And this is from Phil Oakley, right?
Good guy.
He's published it in the Investors Chronicle article.
What is he?
I'll quote him.
PJ Oakley on Twitter.
Yeah, Pete. Phil J. Oakley on Twitter.
I'll
quote him now. You should be very wary of stock market bulletin boards and sites like Twitter. There are some very good people on there who share intelligent insight, but there are also plenty who have set themselves up as judge and jury on a company and just overly ramp its future prospects and say how cheap the shares are. Quite often the companies concerned are high risk and do badly when when the economy turns down. I've seen plenty of people on social media that all own the same stock. You talk about clustering, but unsurprisingly, they don't own the shares when things turn sour. The golden rule here is to do your own research, form your own ideas, and don't blindly copy others. So reiterate, just watch your own performance, don't gauge other people's performance and then think that you haven't done so well. Just focus on your own performance and focus on your own research.
And have reasonable expectations.
Have reasonable expectations, exactly.
You know, it's that classic thing that people want to make 30% a year. Well, you know, you aren't going to consistently make 30% a year unless you're better than Warren Buffett and better than the Naked Trader and better than Peter Higgins. It's just not going to happen.
Right. So, the essential thing is that all you have to do is to be and try to be better than yourself than what you did last year. Because the whole point of all this stuff that we're doing on here is to try and enable ourselves and everybody else to improve.
Yeah, absolutely.
Every single thing is about improvement and trying to get better at something. You know, at the job that you are currently in or you were previously in, and if you were retired, you started out 15, 20, 30 years ago, or you started your first job last week. In 30 years' time, you want to be better than the first day you started. So be patient with yourself, you know, and give yourself the ability to make mistakes and learn from those mistakes. So the only people that lose long-term investing in the stock market are those that refuse to learn. All they want to do is copy other people's ideas and never learn about the market. And they wonder why they can't achieve success long-term and why it's so ad hoc and things keep going wrong for them. Because they don't learn how to research the market. And it's very difficult to research the market. And I still haven't got it right. There was a stock I sold last week, Pete. I've lost track of the days now.
Yeah.
Last week, finally exited it. Mercia Asset Management.
Oh, yeah.
Or Mercia Tech, as it's called now.
Yeah.
In November, December of this year, I would have held the stock for 3 years, Pete.
What's the epic on that?
MERC.
Okay.
So Merc, as in mercenary.
Yeah.
Right?
Or Mercedes.
Yeah, Mercedes. But I held the stock, Pete, for nearly 2.5 years, mate. It's clustered with biotech, biopharma, AI, this, that, you name it. Every single tech bundle you can have, they've got investment stakes in that company.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know what, researched it. I even went and met the management at one stage, Pete, right? And spoke to them. I'm happy here. They'll sell one of these off. One of these will become a unicorn. One of them will do that. They made an absolute bundle on Prism, Blue Prism, Pete.
Yeah.
You know, 155 times or 100 times the amount that they invested in originally. You know, it was all go. Pete ended up selling that, right, for a 47% loss last week.
Oh,
I just
man.
Had to take it on the chin and go, you know what, I'm done.
Yeah,
I've been patient with this stock. I got it wrong. All the research in the world doesn't mean you're going to get it right. So how can you be successful, right, if you haven't done any research?
Well, that's exactly it. Yeah, I mean.
And I was wrong, Pete, 47%. And the only thing that twisted me out of the spiral in the stock, right? Granted, it might pop and go up 100% next week, as sometimes it normally
does. It always does when we sell out.
But it was because of Ixico, Loop, up, and DDD.
Yeah.
I had all the tech things going on there, all popping and all going up. And I had them basically for Ixico a bit longer, but Loop up 8 months. DDD had had for 6 weeks and it was up 300%. I'm thinking, why am I sitting with this stock that's down 47%? Let me just get rid and move on.
And
I can reinvest that money somewhere else if and when I want to.
There's an interesting psychology thing there. I think it's an important thing that when you've got, you know, when you're doing well on some stocks and you know that your portfolio is doing okay and you're reasonably happy, you can clear out some of your junk sometimes. Sorry, you know, not saying Merck's junk, but, you know,
it was festering in my portfolio.
Yeah,
mate.
Well, that's it. And you get to think, you just think, I've had it with this stock, it's time to move on. And often it's a good thing to do, you know. It's always a tough call because the biggest risk is that you sell it out right at the bottom. I've done that so many times.
It's always a recipe, but the thing is, I've had opportunity over opportunity the past year to sell that much, much higher.
Yeah.
And because of what it held in the basket, and because I knew the stock so well, the bias and the psychology of my knowledge on this particular portfolio of investments was like, nah, not selling it. I know better.
Yeah.
But then I've gone, no. But what happens in the on the stock market and in investing and on Twitter and various other places is that people champion these stocks, right? And then they sell it, and then they come out and say that stock was rubbish, which is essentially what I've done now. But what I'm trying to say is you've got to be very mindful that people championing stocks can still get it wrong. So whether or not they've got 10 followers or 10,000 followers, they still get it wrong. Just because they might be intelligent or can give you insight or know the stock better than you doesn't mean that they are right. And I was wrong regarding Mercia.
And it's totally something that on the psychology side that, you know, I think a lot of new investors really struggle with this, is that you will get a lot wrong. And you've got to accept that, you know, you've got to accept that chances are 30-40% of the stocks you pick are not going to work out how you wanted them to. And the key is to make the 50-60-70% that do go all right to make more money than the 30-40 that go bad lose. And
that's a very, very good point, Pete. Very well made. And it goes back to the essence, which I think, you know, in hindsight, I've completely failed on, because the whole point is, And I know that you've struggled with it in the past with certain other stocks, Pete.
Oh, I do all the time. Is
the fact of cut your losses quickly.
Yeah.
Right? But I think when you get into the research element and you know this stock really, really well, you end up holding it. So ordinarily, I would have a 15 to 20, 25% stop loss on a stock, a manual one, not automatic.
Yeah.
We spoke about, you know, moving the stop losses and all the rest of it. You know, with the certain stocks, I won't use it. I'll be like, no, I'm fine. You know, but if you're new in the market, the advice would be, as Pete says, probably to have a stop loss and make it so it just takes you out, so you don't have to do it, so it doesn't start playing with your psychology.
There's a lot to be said.
For the hardest thing for experienced fund managers, as we've seen with Neil Woodford and others, right, is to bank a loss. I saw people last week or the week before last kicking off because of Downing came out with some information regarding one of their funds, and the vast majority of their funds have not done very well for 2 or 3 years now.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, I don't know.
That's got to be hard when you're a fund manager, hasn't it? It's like when you're a private individual, I mean, obviously someone like myself who posts everything I do on Twitter and on my website, and I give yearly reports of my performance, obviously I'm not hiding away much. But when you're in the public eye, I mean, you know, it must be so difficult, especially when you're charging, you know, Downing are effectively charging the investors for what they do, to not be performing. It must be so psychologically tough. I feel for them. It really must be hard.
Yeah, it's psychologically tough, Pete, but, you know, you're compensated with the tweet. I mean, I'm not sure, I can't speak for Downing, but what's the average pay for a fund manager? And then bonuses if the AUM has gone up.
Yeah, that probably management. Softens the blow
up. They're making a lot of money, mate. You know, you've got a Buffettology fund, which has got billions under assets. You know, it's probably taking in £100 million in profits each year. They're paying each other a lot of money doing that.
Yeah, so thanks for listening, everybody. And if you can, one thing to remember, if you can hit the subscribe button, it's free. You know, it doesn't cost you nothing. Hit the subscribe button. It gives you alerts when new podcasts come out. And I think it's easier for you to find it and stuff when you've got that. And it also gives you other suggestions of things to listen to, etc.
Okie dokie, people. You can find us on Apple iTunes, obviously, SoundCloud, Audio Boom, Spotify, Overcast. And as Mark Bentley pointed out, Marbin100 on Twitter, if you're looking for us on via Audio Boom, which is for Overcast, Apple iTunes, and also Spotify, you need to find us under the Conker's Corner icon and name rather than Twin Peaks, because it's just something that happened when we were trying to get a double on iTunes. They wouldn't let us have two accounts, so you can find it under Conker's Corner on there. But thanks once again, ladies and gents, wherever you are in the world. stay safe, stay healthy, look out for your neighbour, look out for your friends, look out for your family, and above all, just stay safe, and we look forward to hearing from you and your feedback, and hopefully you'll continue to listen and enjoy what we had to share. Take care. God bless.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.
This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast was brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.